Welcome to the Marketing for Business podcast. This is your host, Scott Wilson.
Mitch Shaw, welcome to the Marketing for Business podcast.
Yeah, awesome to be here.
Mate, I'm fantastic. I read something that I think is really cool. Look, you're part of, well, you started Upstream, but it says here, when we work together, we win together. Mm. How good is that?
Well, I often like to say stuff like, you know, where we go together, we're going to grow together.
Nice.
Which kind of means like you're heading that direction, I'm heading that direction. Why don't we go together and actually we could grow together?
Yeah.
And it sort of ties into that as well. Like, well, if we actually collaborate, which means we work together, we can actually win together.
That's pretty cool, eh?
Mm.
And where did that philosophy come from? Obviously, you've got to, when we're going to talk about Upstream and how that's helping businesses grow together and win together, where does that philosophy come from your background?
Yeah, so my background was charity work. So I was a youth worker, which took me obviously working with children and young people.
Yep.
Straight out of school, did that for 13 years.
Oh, wow.
As part of that journey, I was also the fundraising manager for the trust. I had to raise about $500,000 dollars to support about 10 youth workers across our region. And I guess for me, that took me into the relationship working with businesses or collaborating with them. And what we found is our greatest, I guess, ask was, hey, you're a company. I guess, would you support our charitable work that we're doing? It's good work. And often that was a one-way street because we're at the mercy of them saying yes or no.
You or no, yeah.
And it meant that we could either do this work or not with or without them. And it was sort of not, we weren't working together. It was really just like a what I call downstream income.
Yep.
Which kind of means I'm at the mercy of someone up the top.
Yeah.
Either putting money in the river or not.
Whether they give it to you or not. Yeah.
Yeah, and it was the difference between us actually being successful in our charity work or not, because we were running pretty thin. So I started thinking, like, how do we actually work together rather than just me turning up and asking for a check, which is good, and a lot of companies do that, but there's a lot more people asking for resources. And so we had to think about outside the box of how do we actually work together in a way that would create a win-win.
That would have like, for business owners, kind of that – putting a different spin on the ask would have really opened up doors for you, guys, because most people just ask, right, without really thinking about how do we give anything back, right?
There's a wee image I often say, and I wouldn't say it is a great image for charities, but often charities are really relational, really connected, and so we often know the companies that are pretty generous and giving out money, and I often say it's kind of like throwing a hot chip at the beach, and a seagull, you might feed one seagull and think, oh, that's right, it's only one, but actually all your mates hear about it.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you haven't got enough hot chips and there's like hundreds of seagulls.
Yeah, one.
And to me, it's not to say that charities are, we shouldn't support them because New Zealand is really generous in doing so, but it's to say that actually we need to do it differently because actually companies need those resources to be around to support their staff.
Yeah.
But also we've got an issue in our communities that needs to be solved. So somehow fundraising has to be thought outside the box.
Yeah. And has that led you to Upstream? Like that's how you created...
Yeah.
Came from that idea?
Yeah. It was actually one of my companies that was supporting us directly. It was a heat pump cleaner and he was traditionally giving us a fund each year. That sum of money supported one of my community programs and it was significant to the point where it funded most of the consumables that were needed for a whole year. Then he had a hard year and I didn't understand as a charity manager what a hard year meant.
Yep.
I just thought companies are, you know, in my mindset, I thought they're all rich and they all did well, and that's where all the money was going to come from to support our work. But he couldn't fund us that year, and he said, "Mitch, I just can't get that sum of money." And I said, "Well, we're not going to be able to run this program." And so I started digging. I said, "Well, what is it that would help?" And he said, "Oh, I just haven't had enough revenue this year." And I said, "Oh, well, what do you need? I just need more sales." I said, "Oh, what? So you're a heat pump cleaner? You just need more heat pump cleans?" And I said, "Oh, I know heaps of people." That was the greatest asset I had.
Yeah.
And so it started this idea of like, oh, well, my asset is know lots of people. And if I can inspire them they should use you, you're the what, I'm the why.
Yeah, yeah.
You got a heat pump, you need it clean. Yes. But why you should use him actually drove the transaction.
Yeah, yeah.
It just transitioned towards OC rather than give me that sum of money. Maybe give me a percentage of what I find you.
Nice.
And that that supplier was our first supplier to join Upstream, and he's since given far greater than the donation that he would continued to give over the 6 years. So.
That's so good, right?
Mm.
And that's a real win-win too.
Yeah, well, it's adding revenue that they didn't have. So this is new revenue. This is not existing. This is Upstream suppliers are going, look, they're spending that money on, you know, say Google AdWords, or they're spending it on, networking. And those are good things, but often that can be to the point where they're looking for other opportunities or markets that would increase new leads or new revenue. And so what we're saying is, if we can be one of those sources, then would you give us a percentage of what we find you, and we put that towards charitable trust? So it's a win in the sense of their philanthropy has come out of new revenue that they didn't have.
They didn't have anyway. So how do you help them? Is that because you have a network now that you can bring in other people from your network to, you know, facilitate new business? Is that how?
I would say humbly, the first few sales was mum and dad and sister, and often that's probably how you set your business up anyway. But it was really selling pretty early on to a really tight community of people I knew. Since then, fast forward, is the seventh year, there is a real strong network of suppliers that are part of the Upstream community.
Yeah.
I also think there is a second circle, I guess, outside of that supplier community that is starting to know a little bit more about what we do and consider, well, what good can we do by using your first aid trainer or using your commercial cleaner or, you know.
That's cool. So as more and more people find out about it, you can go. Do you have a directory on the?
Yeah, so our website, I guess, is a form of directory.
Yep.
The upstream.co.nz, and that allows us to, I guess, inspire people and then point them towards the website and say, if this is something you need, go in there. If a supplier can offer it and they're a good value or a good price or what you're looking for, then you know that there's a percentage of that transaction that's going to go towards local charities.
Is the percentage set, or is it driven by the person supplying how does that all work?
Yeah, so we often at the start, we were trying to find, again, we would ask the question, what's a win-win? So what is a percentage that you can sustain that is not too much that you can't sustain it, but also not enough that it wouldn't really inspire the customer to do anything?
Yeah.
So we often found those middle points. And then there's been sort of some industries now that we're starting to go, look, this is a sustainable percentage to give local charities, or this is a win-win percentage defined by the ones that have come before you. But we're always open. I think there's been scenarios where we didn't realize we'd be in, where we're tendering or quoting for large jobs, go, that percentage is not going to be sustainable on that client. So let's talk about what's a win-win, because in the end, we want a little bit out of a great opportunity rather than nothing out of, nothing.
Yeah, exactly. And so the money comes in. What do you guys do then? Like, you obviously have a charitable trust, and you have a board and all that sort of stuff. And how do you have certain charities that you're aligned to, how does that all work?
Yeah, so again, Upstream for us, we wanted to align with charities supporting children and young people.
Nice.
I think naturally, because that was my background, I did youth work with primary school and high school age. It's quite easy to talk about the need in New Zealand.
Yeah.
Not only that, but also the need for why a youth worker is important, or counselling is important, or social support for young people is critically important. So we just decided we want to funnel our money towards that sector.
Nice.
So our charities we partner with have to be working with children and young people as a criteria. And then I guess at this stage we've hand-selected some, especially that are Canterbury-based, where we've started. To really support. So when a sale comes in, a customer often gets to vote what charity or an area they'd like to support.
Cool.
And that has some weight towards, obviously, what goes where.
Yeah, yeah.
That itself created software issues and a whole lot of work
to
work out how to do that. But we wanted to make sure that customers who are the driving force behind engaging a supplier have some sort of vote or some sort of voice. Yeah, and so
that's cool though, right? Like, it gets people that kind of, hey, they're spending the money, but then they get to choose, which I think that's very cool.
Yeah.
Adds another dimension to it, right?
Yeah, similar to if you went to the fuel station, say Zed, or warehouse, they often have a token and sort of go, hey, look, I want to, my spend allow me to vote in this vote. I want it to go to yes.
Yeah.
Mm. So it's similar to that.
When you look at the youth and the young people, like, do you see, you know, like it always interests me, like, there is such a need, right? And as a youth worker, for 13 years and seeing, you know, things raising over $500,000, you know, what are some of the biggest things that you've seen change over the years when it comes to, you know, it seems that there's loads of organizations out actually helping people, but what where's the real impact coming from the money that you're putting in?
I think, I mean, you can't ever discount relationships.
Yeah.
So you think about today's society, children, young people hitting those critical ages of predominantly 10 to 15 is your bracket where young people starting to come into an adult body, starting to question a lot about life and who they are and what's stable and what's and trustworthy. So there's a lot of decisions in that time, a lot of pressures. So you fuel that with some around obviously the digital media
is
fueling some perceptions. And so that a young person is pretty vulnerable at that time.
Yeah.
Relationships, you'll never do wrong funding key people that are trusted by those young people.
Yeah.
Being a stakeholder in their life.
Yeah.
And so what I mean by a stakeholder is someone that is actually planted next to that young person as they're starting to grow, kind of like a vulnerable tree. You plant a tree and you put 5 stakes around it.
Yeah.
You put a wee shield to protect it from the wind.
Yeah.
Imagine a young person that's going to come strong is like a vulnerable tree, and the more stakes you put around them, whether it's a sports coach or a counsellor or a really positive teacher in their life or a youth worker, the more resilient that tree's going to be, that young person's going to be as they grow. And I think we often talk about this as like some young people, unfortunately, won't have a whole lot of stakes in their life, and the best thing that we can fund is to fund stakes, especially for young people that don't have a whole lot of options, whether it's single parent, they have to work, you know, whether it's I don't have a teacher I could trust or a counselor that I know that I could share my issues with.
It was really interesting. I went to an Inspire Foundation session, and they had Nathan Wallace there, and he was talking about how, you know, if they could make one change, he would recommend that in the schooling that teachers kids have teachers for more than 3 years. He says, and I might have talked to you about this. How that familiarity of that one person around, because a lot of kids don't have that, right? They don't have that constant person in their life. And you know, it's hard for some people to see. It's maybe like myself, who, you know, brought up in a family, split family, but brought up in a family where I had a lot of people around me. You know, you kind of forget that there's a lot of people out there that don't have that, right? And that need those, you know, I like what you said about stakes. So the money that you raise, you look to support people around those people? And like, do you ID or do you give certain charities that do that sort of work?
We definitely partner with the charities that are providing support work. So we partner with a number of local charities that are doing youth work services.
Yep.
Obviously, again, background being youth work, I know the value that I played in a young person having a resource they could come to if and when things were tough for them. And I was sometimes one of 700 students, so I was the only resource. And sometimes we had 2 youth workers to 700 students in high school. And for me, that was pretty vulnerable because you couldn't know every young person in a deep way. But we'll fund youth work. We'll fund counselling subsidies because kids, if they don't go through the free system, the public system, which can be 6-month waiting list, they're up against private counselling, which will cost them $100 a session. And if that's a barrier that a parent can't afford because the child's not funding it, then often that kid has unresolved issues. So we'll fund youth work, counselling. We work with some charitable trusts that like Conductive Education Canterbury that do support for kids with disabilities. We'll fund mentoring matches. So it's sort of those support industries, I guess.
Yeah.
Think about stakeholders.
It seems like, you know, some, as you said, quite overwhelming sometimes, you know, like 700 kids to one, that's a lot. Have you seen, like, obviously in Canterbury, how's everything going in this region, like compared to maybe some of the other regions around, you know, like, what's your feedback experience with that?
Yeah, I don't know where I saw this, but I saw it a few years ago that Canterbury has disproportionately the highest mental health statistics
yep.
in the region. And I saw a graph, and I can't quote where I saw it, but it was post-quake is the issue. So a lot of the unresolved stuff
yes.
for five-year-olds or under, so preschoolers, children in high school, say we're 10, 12, 13 years from the earthquakes in Canterbury, but those one-year-olds, three-year-olds, five-year-olds are now sort of
in their teens.
14,
yeah. Yeah,
15. So, and just the high levels of anxiety and not a whole lot of resources. I mean, and that's why there's been some significant funding from the government and some other agencies to say we need to think about children, young people in Canterbury. And it will be the same in Auckland and Hawke's Bay, you know.
True.
So yeah, there's some it's sort of some significant research after a major event, and what effects that's done to children, young people coming up into young adults.
Yeah, yeah. It's awesome that you've got like I love how you put businesses together. You know, majority of these listeners are business owners, right? So, you know, and everyone, or like from most people from a business perspective, I know want to give back, right? They want to be involved, and I think you've really created a really win-win of how they can. Get involved. Is it a software-driven program that you've created at the, on the back end of this as well?
That's I mean, it's very similar to, because people often say, what is it? And I often say, look, it's a community of companies that want to do good.
Yeah, because I see some posts that you're doing some real good stuff too. You get you kind of get your community together, which is awesome, right?
And it's like I'm so passionate about making sure that no one's left out. You know, every supplier means something, you know, something to me.
Yeah.
And I would hope that our community represents that. but for me, it's to track the transactions.
Yeah.
I had to build some software that would enable us to know, oh, that was a lead and it came from upstream and it converted and how much was it and where is it going to benefit because the customer's chosen.
Yeah, yeah, that's awesome.
To vote for that area. And so that had software needs from day one.
Yeah.
That took us a while to build, but that's enabled us to track a whole lot of transactions in the background. And our suppliers are obviously passionate companies that they want this to work. So they're often, there's a high trust model with this as well. And people just let us know, hey, that was a sale that came through upstream and update the software. And
brilliant. So does it work in where you get consumers coming in, looking and wanting to find someone who could do, say, a heat pump clean? So it works like that as well. You're out, you know, your networks to bring people in.
Yeah, I'd say it's like a third. Well, it's probably like 25%, 25%, 50%. So 50% of our activity is suppliers, upstream suppliers, getting together with other upstream suppliers and really running it like a network group.
Nice.
So we'll do a big catch up and you might have sort of 40 or 50 that might come to those. That's starting to get quite big. And so we've started these little smaller upstream groups that we get together around the city. And that's where you're going to build really close-knit relationships, build trust, and then be able to work together and win together through referrals. And so those little groups will enable suppliers to generate probably far greater outcomes. And 50% of our activity last year that went to charity, so the amount of money that we raised that went to charity, came out of the little
nice
upstream supplier community getting together.
So work together, win together.
Yeah. And I think
pretty good.
The other parts of that is consumers. Yep. So they might hear our story and go, oh, look, I need a heat pump clean anyway, or I want to get my windows cleaned at home, and they'll use the upstream site.
And you don't vet those companies to see if they're any good or anything, or is it kind of a given that to be part of it, you have to be good? Like, how does that all?
Yeah, I think early days we had the charitable trustees were looking at every supplier and we were making sure that, you know, my question was, would I sell this supplier to my grandma?
Nice. That's a good standard.
Because if I couldn't, you know, I'm often going to feel pretty guilty collecting the money to give to a charity when I've ripped off my grandma's.
Yeah, it's not going to sit well, is it?
So we have, every supplier I want to meet with and just say, look, here's the heartbeat. This is how it works.
Nice.
Is this something you want to be a part of?
Because
if you can't buy into this, then actually let's just agree to not go ahead.
So. Primo. That's awesome. So you have a bit of, you know, there's definitely a bit of quality control there. I like the grandma standard that, because, you know, at the end of the day, you don't want to look grandma in the eye and say, hey.
Yeah, we raised some money, but I ripped you off.
Yeah.
Like, my supplier let you down.
Yeah.
Or like, hey, I know that they let you down and we didn't do anything about it. So to me, it is a community of trust, but also one that, look, people will make mistakes, but I would expect most suppliers will actually rectify them.
Are you starting to see, like I always say, people come for the content, but they stay for the community. Are you starting to see the community really take become a force of itself?
Yeah, I think, I mean, this is our seventh year, so we're 6 years in.
Yeah.
I've probably underestimated the work community, and I think probably only the last sort of year or so to go, actually, our greatest asset is probably not in what we're bringing the suppliers. Our greatest asset is actually the suppliers.
Yeah.
In the community, but also the what we call partners and the customers that are actually generating the outcome. You know, so we work with some large corporate partners that say, hey, look, we've got an operational budget. Hey, we could use some upstream suppliers within our operational budget, and that's generating some significant outcomes.
That's awesome.
So to me, it's like, how do we make sure that they feel included and thanked and inspired and like, look how good you're doing.
And so how are you looking to do that?
Yeah, so we've started doing impact reporting, which is more story-led reporting. So people often like focus on the data and go, how many leads do I get, how much revenue? And we really go, those are components that have led to this amount of community hours being generated. Here's the here's some stories of young people that's lives have been changed. So that impact reporting will offer sort of our larger corporates that are partnering with us, they pay a membership that supports our operational budget.
Yeah.
And also they benefit from these reports that tell a story of the good their spend is doing in their
supply chain. I reckon like that is the power, one of the most powerful things you can do. You know, I always remember talking to someone years and years and years ago, and they were asking us for money. And I said, well, we gave you money last year. No one ever told us what happened to it or did it do any good. So I get that you're asking again, but what happened? And like this person went on and told the story, and I was like, well, that's cool. Yeah, of course I'll donate. You know, like, is that the kind of thing you're thinking about? Like, is that what you're doing?
Yeah, I think it's almost being accountable to, building a software that we could do it per transaction is the end goal, but also these reports are sort of showcasing and going, you are making a difference. Here's how much difference you're making.
Yeah.
And then imagine if we could get here. You know, you're at this level, but imagine if we could pick up this type of procurement. Well, imagine if we could get to this point, you know, and raise 5 youth workers' salaries.
You know?
So it's beginning with the end in mind and pitching where is this going and what are some of the barriers that are stopping us getting there. But I always say, like, to take on your point, charities that will receive donations or sponsorship from a company, they should be seeing it like an investment, and we call it a social investment.
Yeah, nice.
So that person that's contributed that philanthropy, the sponsorship, or the business and donation, or the individual donation, you know, they should be receiving something that says, "Hey, look, what did I get for my investment?"
Yeah,
that investment is not a monetary return; it's a, "Oh, wow." So that $1,000 or $5,000 or that $10,000, this is the good we did with that. And so charities need to stop thinking of themselves as a charity that shakes a bucket and never tells their story. They should really be thinking about, okay, this person wants to know, they've invested in my charity for the next 12 months. Here's the good that we've done with it.
Yeah.
Is an account as no other financial investor would expect anyway, right?
Yeah. And it'll be more, as you say, be more impactful. You know, like, I guess that's the, like, you can actually use that in your marketing, right? Like,
absolutely. And we want to, and with our impact reporting, we want to translate that into marketing content.
Because
to me, I just think if you've intentionally made a decision and it's had this social outcome, we should be providing content that says, hey, look, here's an easy way that you can tell the story of the good you're doing.
Can you give me some examples of that? Like, how that might play out for a company?
Yeah. So for a long time, we've had some key relationships in the construction sector. So construction, obviously, have sites all around a city or a region or New Zealand. They're looking at the moment, there's a construction company that we're working closely with, and they've got 8 sites over Canterbury region. And all 8 sites have used upstream suppliers to some sense. They started using our signage company for the... you know, the signage on the company, the health and safety signs, maybe the fence wrap. The project gets finished, they might put frosting, they used our signage for that. Fire extinguishers, you know, health and safety compliance.
Yep,
good. We used our upstream suppliers for those, put on site. When the build gets finished, they use my commercial cleaner to tidy up the build before it gets handed over to the client. So as an example, we were able to determine what upstream suppliers were used on what site, what good each site did,
yeah.
and then basically create a little wee, an impact report for everything, but also site-by-site marketable posts.
Nice.
So you can say like this site that is significantly maybe identifiable to other people has generated this amount of youth work as a result of our exploring our procurement. So it's sort of going, it's what you do is good to talk about,
but yeah.
why you're doing it's the driving force. Mm. And actually what was the good that happened is even better.
Yeah.
And so, well, because it should generate more engagement.
And making that real transparent, right? Like if you know that what you did in that between that particular site impacted 11, maybe let's just say eight youth workers or volunteers, what is say one youth worker, what kind of impact do they have on how many children and what would like, you know, investment in that one youth worker, how much, what would that do to someone? Like how's?
Yeah, I'll bring you some numbers. So when I was a youth worker, I was 10 hours a week.
Yep.
Paid for a whole year. Now that was 10 hours was the portion that I spent in a high school serving the 700 pupils.
Yep.
My role was to just be a stakeholder, know their name, be available. When things are going wrong at home or in school and classrooms, I'm there. And so that 400 hours often wasn't paid high, but we would know that the trust in the school would be basically, and there was a local church actually, it was funding it, and the local church school and trust would have to fund something like 15 to 20K to pay for that service. So then you kind of switch it to someone that's basically using upstream suppliers, generating money that goes back towards a youth worker. Mm. You know, if they generated $5,000, that's a quarter of that youth worker's, so a whole term.
Yeah, whole term.
But if the trust was struggling to find, we'd often struggle to find that money as the charitable trust in that three relationship. That charitable trust would often have to carve off parts of the budget that you just couldn't find.
Can't find.
Yeah. So
it makes a real impact, right? Like it's huge.
Mm.
Yeah. And like obviously that's the thing. If the money's not there, they have to cut it, right? And then end of the day, the children miss out. Like it's, it's.
Well, for every 20, we'll say every $25 would generate one youth worker hour. And what is the significance of me as a youth worker being in a school for an hour?
Mm.
I'd have some pretty significant conversations. Or build some significant trust with a young person.
Yeah.
I remember there was a kid that essentially, it took me a while to build a relationship with him because he'd often have trust issues. But, you know, it took me quite a few months to break him down where other teachers were struggling to sort of get through. And that was a significant portion. But that kid, I'm still actually in his life. So,
oh, wow.
You know, 20 years later, I'm still actually connected to him. And that was the role I played.
Yeah.
Following on where his life's at.
Yeah.
Is pretty special.
That's awesome.
Prefect.
Wow. And when you say, how do you engage kids like that to get them, you know, talking to you? Because a lot of these kids have seen stuff or they've been involved with stuff and some of them just shut down. What do you do? Is it just about being familiar and turning up and doing those little things to give them trust? How does that all work? Because, you know, like I know there's a lot of parents listening to this as well, you know, like as parents, we're always looking for little tips and what can help there.
Yeah, I think to me, it was probably a bit different because I got kids now, so it's a bit different
as
a parent. But as a youth worker, I think just to show up and build trust. Am I someone that you can trust? Am I a safe person to be talked to?
Yeah.
So as a young person, they're often getting
You're a weirdo.
How do you know my name?
Yeah.
I've been looking up stuff. Like,
to
me, it's just, you have to come alongside them from a non-threatening point of view.
Yeah.
Get to know who they are. And sometimes there was this kid that I used to, he'd come up and punch me as a youth worker. As a teacher, you get in big trouble, but as a youth worker, I was like, he'd just come up and that was his way of saying hello, punch me. And I was like, why is this? And I didn't know why. But the best thing I could do, so I'm going to just encourage him. Every time I see him, I'm going to encourage one thing, something on him.
Yeah, yeah.
And whether it was, the weekend, I saw that was really cool. Good on you. And he'd punch me. And I'm like, I really like your shoes. They're not a school regulation, but they're really cool. And he'd punch me.
Yeah.
And then eventually the punching stopped. And it wasn't like aggressive punching.
Yeah.
His way of,
that was his way of sort of saying hello, is communication to him, probably.
Just encouragement, you know, to I show up, I'm there. I take an interest. They say stats show that actually parents often are not looking in the eyes of their child. They're not in the eyes of the heart, of the, you know, the eyes of the soul. And a young person, do they feel love? Or is it really, I'm cooking dinner, I'm talking to them on the TV? Like, are we spending quality time? Or is it really, we're just in the room?
In the room. Yeah. So, and for some kids, no one's even in the room.
And that's, it's a sad reality for
some. Yeah. But it's pretty, like, I guess, you know, from your perspective, you know, now looking back, right, you've got a kid in your life that's been there 20 years and you know that sort of stuff works. It'll probably it drive you even further and make you more determined of what you're doing with Upstream, right?
Yeah. I think, you know, unfortunately, our society wants quick wins.
Yeah.
And I think for young people, especially if they've had traumatic experiences of upbringing, they don't do well with quick wins.
No.
We can't just flick a switch and they're solved or they're cured or they're healed. Like, it's a long journey.
Yeah.
And there's some great charities that are thinking and know it takes, it's the long run.
Yeah.
It's the marathon. But most of the funding is focused on short wins.
Yeah.
So government will come in for a couple of years, or this charitable trust will fund this for three cycles and that's it. And so to take your point before, you know, that Nathan was saying, you know, I reckon you should have a teacher for 3 years. It's all about, because trust is already built.
Yeah.
Now you're starting to get real progress after that first 12 months.
Rapport, man, because he was just saying how the brain and the way the brain develops rapport. And when the people don't have a constant contact or person in their life to build their rapport with, their trust isn't built, which is a massive, massive issue, right? So that long-term view, when you look at the quick wins, I guess, you know, that's a real challenge, right? Because a lot of people today just want that quick win, right? They want the Band-Aid put on it.
Yep.
Is that's the society where we've kind of gone, right? That Band-Aid.
Yeah, well, like my wife, shout out to her, is a child counsellor. So she works with 4 to 13-year-olds predominantly. And the style of counselling she does is child play therapy.
Yep.
And they often say you're going to have to invest probably 10 to 20 sessions to really see some significant change.
Yep.
Now, add a charge out of, say, $100 an hour.
Mm.
You know, that parent is having to weigh up whether this $1,000 to $2,000 is going to be a good investment to get the results that they're looking for their child. And it could be the difference between them, you know, having a holiday that year or being able to upgrade something that's really essential.
Yeah.
You know, so now you've got this dilemma where the parent knows their child needs support. If they delay, sometimes it can be worse.
Yeah.
But, you know, so that's an example of some of the cool outcomes she has experienced has been because those parents and some funding has enabled that parent to make that decision to do sort of 15, 20, 25 sessions.
Yeah.
But that's not an easy call.
No, but I guess at the same time, it's not till you see the impact of it, right? That you see that the other side, and you know that it's a really good thing. Hey, let's talk about some of the things that have happened in your life, though. Like as far as, you know, Westpac, the local hero, you guys won a pretty cool award. Tell us about
that. Yeah, so we won two awards. One was Westfield Mall. So there's a local here. We got recognised as a local hero. That was a few years back now. But since then, because our photo's on the wall, people come down and go, oh, I know that guy. I get comments every week.
Yeah, that's awesome.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
But that's just to recognise the good that we're doing locally. Yeah. I guess probably what we're recognised for is thinking outside the box around how do we create companies to put their hand up in a way that is sustainable.
Yeah.
They can keep saying yes.
Yes.
Because the model just keeps going. And charities get fed at the same time. And then got recognised Kiwi Bank Local Hero of the Year, top 100 finalists. So
that's awesome.
Yeah. So that obviously is kind of nationwide recognition, I guess. And that's, it's pretty special that someone nominated us, but also that we we got recognized as pretty good.
Yeah. And in the top 100, that's outstanding, right? Like it's, well, the thing I think you should be really proud of is the impact that you are making, and people do see it, right? And that sometimes, you know, I guess, you know, you've been doing the whacking, the cracking of this and have a real passion for it. And some you probably don't do it for the awards. Mm-hmm. But it's great to see that people are recognizing mm-hmm. that, right? So, you know, kudos to you. I think it's fantastic that you've, you know, one, you came up with a really cool idea. It's a really cool idea. It's a twist on a way of doing business that is a win-win for everyone. Right? Mm. I really like that. So congratulations. And I'm sure next time you'll win it.
Yeah, I think, like, you're right. You don't do it for the awards. You're doing it for the, I know, for it to work.
Yeah.
For it to help. But to be recognized as kind of like, I guess, winning an award at school. And oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't matter how old you are. Right?
No,
yeah, it's totally nice to be patted on the back.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We all want gold stars, you know, because we grew up with them.
Yeah.
Hey, you know what you know now. If you go back from when you started, and if you're looking back, you know, what are some of the things? What are some of the mistakes you made with this whole model? And what would you do differently? Well, what are you doing differently?
Oh, probably the first mistake is to think it's going to be easy.
Yeah,
I thought, oh, start a business. This is what problem we're going to solve, and it's going to go really well.
Yeah.
And that's probably a good thing as well, because you just jump in.
Yeah.
And you put your effort in.
Yeah, because if you knew the outcome or how long it was going to take and how much more money it was going to take,
yeah,
I mean, you wouldn't start, right? I don't think I've met a business owner yet that goes, oh, I'm crikey, that was easy.
I know.
Yeah.
So that was probably the first one, like, that, oh, wow, this is way harder than I thought.
Yeah.
There's a lot more.
Especially like spinning. When you go into making the software side of things, right?
Yeah. Like, yep.
Yeah.
Yep. So that sinks a lot of money.
Yeah.
And sometimes you got to get a whole lot for that money.
Yeah.
You realize, like, how important is this? Oh, man, do I still believe that this was the right decision?
Yeah.
You can't go backwards.
So
for me, it's been this continuing, like, You need those people around you affirming the direction, affirming how you are doing good.
Yeah.
And it's nice to win awards because that's the community's way of recognizing it. But those close to home people that get you and also get your passion, your vision,
but
can keep you on task.
Yep.
There's been some times where, man, I was ready to give up quite a few times.
Yep.
And I think that's pretty normal from talking to companies, right?
Yeah. What was sort of stuff were you going through? Was it not going as fast as you wanted, or was it just putting too much money in, or the outcomes weren't that you had weren't there? What was the?
Yeah, for it to work, you really need enough suppliers, being part of the community, because the supplier pays a membership, and that helps us pay for our operational costs. But thinking that it was going to be quick and easy to get around a whole lot of suppliers and inspire them, it went slower than I thought. But also, you know, charities need funding today, and so we're feeding them and giving them the contribution out of the transaction, and not thinking probably around, like, sustainability of our own model.
Yep.
So everyone else is winning, but we were actually in a struggle street.
Yeah, I was going to say, how are you making money on this or keeping it afloat so it is a, you know, a viable entity at the end of the day?
Well, that's probably the one that keeps me up at night. I think, you know, suppliers pay membership. We have corporates that we call partners. So they partner with us, pay membership, and we give them reporting and work with their procurement teams to maximize the good. So that's helpful. That's income to upstream as a charity to fund itself.
Yeah.
But that contribution that we broker, supplier says, oh, I'll give you 8% of that heat pump clean. You know, for 6 years, we've never seen that's not our money. We want to make sure that that's helping the kids and that's directed going to our charities. The problem is the chicken, the egg, you need enough suppliers and enough transactions to maintain that. And so to try and get that balance right has been really, really hard.
Yeah. Do you think you have that in there now?
I wouldn't say we're on the way to sort of making some better decisions that will structure the business to be more sustainable. And we also took a few punts, like, we need some more people. Let's take a punt. And those people were amazing. And then it's just COVID hit. And then thought, oh, man, are we going to sink? And then the economy's hit and we lost some suppliers that really gutting to lose because they lost their businesses. And So you just like, it's just, there's just been this environment to make these decisions is not normal in this season as well.
Yeah, it hasn't been the easiest environment to run businesses probably in the last few years, right? Like it's, and then, you know, putting aside the charity side of things, you know, adds a bit of an edge to it. What are you thinking now though? Like, look, you're mainly based in Canterbury. Are you looking to extend the network to other parts of New Zealand?
Yeah, so we're standing in Canterbury. Most of our supply chain is Canterbury. That's obviously pretty natural because our relationships are here. We started picking up suppliers outside of Canterbury that are
brilliant,
kind of have a presence here, but also a capability in Auckland or Wellington or further out to the regions. That's enabled us to talk to bigger companies and like say, hey, we've got a supplier that could service that category and make it nationwide serviceable, which has been great. But we are definitely looking at growing upstream outside of the Canterbury region.
Yeah.
And the way that we see the future for us is really running intentional communities in each core region, but also little wee local networks.
Yeah.
And those networks are upstream suppliers getting together maybe once a fortnight and really intentionally trying to grow each other's business and giving back to charity at the same time.
Nice. So. And do you have like frameworks for that actually help them do that, or do you leave it up to them? How does that all work?
Yeah, I think a lot of companies have probably tried networking or part of network groups that essentially have a structure. I guess for us, we make sure that these groups are centered on, look, we want to unapologetically generate leads that convert to sale. There is a structure around those.
Yeah.
But we are unapologetic about, we want growth because growth represents outcomes for our kids.
Yeah, yeah, nice.
So for us, it's this win-win mindset that goes, I want to make sure that this is a good fit for the customer, but we want to make sure that these groups are really referring and talking about their needs and also referring their clients. So
that's cool.
We don't want a meeting for a meeting's sake.
No. Because you want to work together and win together.
Absolutely.
You know, that's what you want people to do. What does the supplier get? Like, we might have a few people thinking, hey, this sounds like a great idea. What does the supplier get when they join? Mm. Obviously, there's a community of people and a really awesome thing that people can give to. But what did they also get? I think, you know, you do some cool other things that probably touch on.
Yeah. So, I mean, the first and foremost is they're part of something.
Yeah,
that is making a difference. And for a lot, you touched on it, a lot of companies are looking to put their hand up and go, you know, I want to have purpose to my business or I want to give back, or maybe they don't have the capacity to do that. Well, with Upstream, you do.
Yeah.
Yes, there is a membership cost that is, you know, each year there's a component to joining Upstream.
Yeah.
But for that, you know, you get a listing on the website. We try and drive traffic towards that.
Yeah.
Like I said before, a lot of that traffic is other suppliers getting to know who you are
and
considering how they could channel work towards you or use you for themselves. We come up with percentage you give back to the community, and you know that's your portion of good.
Yeah.
But yeah, we do monthly catch ups with our wider community and try and tell the story. You're part of something that's making a difference.
Yeah.
And I think that in itself didn't have a whole lot of clout probably in the beginning.
Yeah. But as it grows, you know, and as more people join and as more money is raised and more people are helped and the more impact one of the things you've got really good at is telling those stories, right? That's probably the difference maker for a lot of business owners now, right?
Yeah, we want to, I mean, every transaction is a story to me.
Mm.
So, you know, if it's like, hey, this customer used this supplier and this was the outcome for young people. And that equation we could do for every transaction.
Yeah.
And what we want to do is obviously make our software generate those stories automatically.
Yeah.
So that you as a supplier could be empowered to be able to look and go, hey, look, oh, wow, look at the good I've done. And I feel proud to be part of this. So,
that's very cool.
Yeah.
Have any real success stories that you've seen, either from a supplier point of view or from a, you know, who you've given money to, like anything that comes to mind?
Well, I think the charitable trust that backed us basically when this is a crazy idea 7 years ago, they're now, you know, we're their second biggest funder, which is significant for any charitable trust. But, you know, they took a punt. They put in money and time and support to get us going. And so for them, you know, I just think good on them, but also they support a lot of kids across Canada.
Yeah.
So
that's awesome.
The community is better for this idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's significant. And it's sort of enabling, you know, it's the equivalent of what would it be worth? It's enabling basically, it's about eight youth workers in a school, basically the amount of funding that they're getting. If all that money went towards that, obviously yep. that's the equivalent, but it's significant money that's going to them. I think from a supplier point of view, I think there's one charity actually we had a relationship with. They were looking at getting internet put into their premise. Just so happened to talk to the person and they said, oh, I've just signed off getting fibre because they're in a rural region. Yep. It was hard to get fibre. And I said, oh, what was the, who'd you end up going with? Oh, we've approved this company. And I said, oh, have you got a second opinion? And I said, oh, we haven't got time. We need to get it fixed. And so we ended up getting a second opinion with our supplier overnight.
Brilliant.
And saved them $65,000 in revenue.
Wow.
And then it generated the equivalent of, I think it was just under, it was 187 counselling subsidies out of the transaction as well.
Yeah, so, good.
So it was a saving for the customer.
Yeah.
It was a significant win for the supplier.
Yeah.
And a massive amount of good for the community at the same time. And it, that's what spurred me on to, man, companies or charities or anyone that's got a budget, you know, we could probably have a conversation and say, look, where are the wins that we could add value?
Yeah.
How can we work with our supply chain to look at some of these lines in your budget or lines in your operational spend? And then how could they be turned into doing good back to local communities? So, so that was one of those cool success stories. I'm like, oh man, everyone won.
Yeah.
It was a
dream. Yeah, yeah.
It was pretty cool.
That's awesome too though, right? Because, we'll just get a second opinion. There's no harm in it, right? All of a sudden.
Yeah, for that that charity, you know, that they had to find $65,000 that they were going to spend with someone else. But that $65,000, much rather put that money that they've saved back into actually doing their work rather than. And they got the same. They actually got a better product installed as well. So it was sort of one of these like, man, it was real fortunate timing.
Yeah, yeah. But that's the way it works, right? When you're doing good for good people, you know, people need to find out about you. You know, how do you market yourselves? Like, what do you do to market yourselves?
It's funny because I don't think because we're structured to give our money away, out of the contribution, we have a small budget to be able to talk about our story. So right from we go, we've really relied on the community talking about us, getting the word out there. Some of the marketing we do will be online presence. Through charity channels or charity relationships that we're partnering with, you know, there's an incentive for them to get upstream story out there.
Yep.
But again, that supplier community is everything to us. So them feeling connected and talking about us and receiving benefit from it, but also contributing to it.
Yeah.
Is allowing word of mouth to get out there.
I think that's a real opportunity, right? Because you've got those suppliers who want to be part of that content, you know? Mm.
Yeah, and we have to do obviously better at telling story and can we get these reports being automatic or marketable content coming out of sales being automatic. If we can do some of those things in the future, it would empower even greater numbers of suppliers and customers.
But sometimes it's just doing the real simple stuff, the basic stuff. I was at a thing yesterday and like no one was taking photos and I'm like, you got to get caught doing the things that you want to do more of, right? So so what are you doing? Like, let's start taking some photos of what we're all doing, you know? And people are like, oh, no, I need a camera. Cool, turn your back and I'll take a photo where you're doing this like, job over here.
Mm.
You know, but if you want more people involved, get caught doing the things you want them to be doing more of, right? It's like strategy sessions. We do a ton of strategy sessions, but we post that we're doing them, right? Mm. We do talks, but we post because we're doing talks, you know? Mm. We want to get caught doing the things we want to do more of. And I think even the simple stuff that you could, you know, and I know you do this already, but, you know, getting your suppliers you know, posting about jobs that they're doing that help upstream, tagging upstream, you know, or your events that you're doing, you know, tagging them in and making sure everyone's sharing them, making sure, like this podcast here, one of the things we've created is a podcast pack. So you end up getting static videos, you'll get short form video content, you'll get a blog, you'll get an audiogram, all this sort of things will be sent to you to put on your social media. And it's about packaging it up and making it easier for your people, but also simple things. Just getting caught doing what you want to do more of.
Can I ask you a question then? So, like, we obviously work with a lot of SMEs. What's scary in terms of people's approach towards marketing? Because marketing is quite broad.
Yeah.
What do you find is some common sort of fears, but kind of misconceptions? Like they're overthinking it.
Yeah, well, they're definitely overthinking it. And one of the key things is, you know, you've really got to think about you've got to show up in the marketplace, you know. So a lot of people will say to me, oh, you know, I've got to get my name out there, but then they'll do one post. We'll get my name out there. Well, is that it? What does that actually mean? Now, marketing is about having a consistent message plus a frequency of reach to create a relevancy, right? And that consistency of message is how you want to show up, who you are, where you are, what you have to offer and why people should buy from you. If you just answer those four things and we're then consistent around that, people would start to know, like, and trust you. The frustrating, well, not the sad part for a lot of businesses, or they'll just do it once or they'll do it for like a three-month period. They never give themselves enough time to be relevant. So then they spend a bunch of money, but they spend it, you know, you're either best to spend it in a real short period of time and go really, really hard. But at the end of the day, it's better to spread it out over, you know, a year's time and be consistent with it. I was talking to a really good branding expert on the podcast here last week, you know, and have branding running, have your branding ads running, who you are, where you are, what you have to offer, why should people buy from you, and then have your call to action ads running as well. Most people think of marketing as a sprint. Your marketing and branding marketing is a sprint. Marketing is more a race, but branding and growing a business is more about a marathon, right? I think most business owners get sick of it before the market gets sick of it, right? So they'll be running advertising and marketing and they won't be measuring it and they'll just be getting sick of it where the public hasn't even seen it yet.
Second question. How have you seen companies or people out there using, impact or social good or in their marketing effectively or not just effectively, but so how they're using it?
One thing we did with Novus New Zealand is a client of ours and we're trees that count, right? So we said, because we've had a consistent message over the last 9 years that we've worked for them. One's on strategy, one's on safety, one's on locally owned and operated, because we're up against an American firm. So it was 68 franchises locally owned and operated. And then fun was another part of it, you know, because at the end of the day, wind screens can be a bit boring. So shall she crack and have a bit of fun, right?
It's good.
So now we've added that environmental impact to it as well, right? And we saw, you know, Mike, James and Tim, that James looking at a lot of charities that they wanted to give to him, and a lot of was top heavy, the money that was, they want to be part of the environment. So they looked at trees, right? So one of the key things I said at the start though, every time we release about the trees, we're going to go from zero to the number that we've planted, because for every job, every job we're doing, we plant a tree. So at the moment, we're up to 11,897 trees, right?
Wow.
Now, other businesses are planting trees, okay? We're just telling people, here's how many we've done, you know? Because we want people to come along in the journey, right? Because a lot of times people say they're doing stuff, but you never know what they're doing. We're talking about the impact here, you know, like you've talked about. We're talking about impact, you know, trees. This is the trees. So then, also, we'll go out and we go and do plantings. So we're going to go plant trees. So I think the next one's up September. In Arrowtown, we're planting trees, you know. So once again, getting caught doing things we want to do more of, you know. So that for us has been a way to, you know, it's a little thing, but it lets people in the door versus, you know, Air New Zealand just coming on and saying, hey, we plant trees. We're planting 11,897. I know that because that was up today.
Well, I think, you know, it's that. So I often think, like, what you do is what you do. So you go to work and you replace windscreens.
Yeah.
So that's what you do. Why do you do it? So why will always drive the what? And in Upstream's case, we often can be the why that clips onto a business and say, we can bring a why to you.
Yeah.
We can work together and win together, and we'll bring that social element that may be something you're passionate about. But
yeah,
if we didn't talk about the tangible and say, so what did that do?
The cool, then,
yeah.
The cool part there is, I went to a thing at the AMP show with the radio MediaWorks, and they had the Breeze, right? So the Breeze are a big part of the driving force behind the trees with Novus, and they had some people there, and I was standing next to a lady, and she said, "Oh, you got the Novus T-shirt." And I really, she goes, "I really like to see what you're doing with the trees. You know, like you're counting the trees out."
Yeah.
She goes, "I really like that." And I was like, wow, you know, like, and I said, "Oh, do you use Novus?" She goes, "Oh, of course I do." You know, so sometimes you think what you're doing really doesn't matter, but to a lot of people, those little things add up. And I think they're the little things that get missed. But at the same time, they're easy to do, but they're easy not to do, you know? So I think that's for you, like, and you see what you're doing, the impact, the stories, you know, that's where you can really lean in on that. And, you know, as I say, you've got a community there, which is half the battle, right? Like, you've got people there that want to help you, which is pretty cool. Hey, Mitch, this has been a fantastic podcast. Like, I've learned a lot, and it's gone really fast. Is there anything else that you'd like to share that with these business owners, or how can people get in? Also, how can people get in contact with you?
Yeah, I mean, if you've been inspired today, I think we're looking for companies that want to join Upstream, and we can have the conversation around what does that look like.
Yeah.
You know, what role do you want to play as part of Upstream? But if you wanted to reach me, you can go to upstream.co.nz or email me, mitch@upstream.co.nz.
We'll put all those links in the show notes and on our website, etc., so you can get in contact with Mitch. Where do you see the future for Upstream? Like, obviously, I've talked a wee bit about maybe growth, but where do you see?
Well, I mean, everyone's got a budget, right? So it's a company, it's a charity, it's a school, it's a council. Council's giving away $1 billion in tenders. Imagine a slice of that being used with Upstream suppliers, and that would generate significant money. I see a world, well, New Zealand, where basically large projects or even this community just growed, where essentially people are referring to Upstream suppliers, and we're generating significantly back into local community.
Nice.
And it's people's way of saying, look, I was prepared to give this anyway. Here's a tangible way that we can sustain this. And so I can see New Zealand where there's Upstream little network pods or whatever you want to call them, or little regions with Upstream suppliers getting together and really trying to drum up business so that we can give back to that local region.
Yeah. I think there's real power in that too, right? Because people, you know, work together, win together. There's a real philosophy behind that that you can galvanize people into as well. And look, they're going to do the work anyway, but they also might win the work because they're part of the Upstream, you know?
Yeah. And I think for people to feel like you can make a difference, you know, you might be an electrician, a plumber.
That's a strong point, eh?
Yeah, we just clip on and go like, hey, now you've got a reason to really go to work and do a good job for that client.
Yeah.
Or hey, that's come from a different supplier or a supplier's client. You know, man, that one actually generates some good. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
But you just did your job as you normally would.
Yeah.
But this one actually made a difference.
Yeah. The social investment. I really like that side of things too, you know, like, and also your little part actually plays a bigger part.
Oh,
one of the things I've taken away today. That's right.
Yeah. You know? We've invoiced the smallest invoices, but we used to say a win's a win no matter how small.
Yeah.
Because some of the invoices we've collected out of, say, an hour of a tradies time, we might have collected $1.20. That $1.20 has morphed into $350,000 that we've given away. So
that's epic.
Yeah.
Man, well done. I really appreciate your time. And hey, as always, you know, check this guy out. Check out upstream.co.nz and see what they're doing. And like, another question, does it matter if there are other suppliers in the same industry? Do you know?
No, I think for us, it's like the kids lose if we're exclusive. True. So we're often sort of say like, yeah, we're in it for the young people to benefit in New Zealand. So we have suppliers that are multiple crossovers, but actually the heartbeat is that we work together. We're all going to win together.
We're together.
So yeah, for me, I think it's pretty important. Let's just have that conversation and sort of see if there's a fit
here. Yeah. So. And what I love about this conversation, Mitch, is working together, you're winning together. But at the same time, it's a way people can do something that they're already going to do. You know, you're going to go buy something, so buy it from one of Mitch's upstream people and suppliers. But also at the same time, you know, suppliers can get involved and really, really do some good. So it is a win-win, and I can definitely see pods all around New Zealand. I can definitely see that happening. So, man, I appreciate your time. I'm lucky to get you in before you win the Kiwi Bank Hero of the Year next year. You have to promise me you won't get too big for the podcast and you'll come back once you've won it. Man, I really appreciate your time. Hey, guys, thanks for watching today or listening. Mate, what a great interview. Please share this one. Share this one with some business owners that you know maybe could create a pod together and get together and join upstream and become something bigger than you already are. Whether you are anywhere in the country, make sure you reach out and get in touch with Mitch and his team. As always, I need you to do one thing. Just share the podcast. Share the podcast with one other person. We're growing our community and helping businesses and helping people learn about what you can do here and to market your business and be more successful. So have fun. And as always, take action.
Hi, Scott Wilson here again. Hey, thanks for listening to the Marketing for Business podcast. We really appreciate you taking the time to listen, and we hope that you learned a lot from today's episode. If you could be so kind as to rate and share the podcast with your other business friends and colleagues, that'd be awesome. And if you'd like to listen to more episodes, why don't you head over to our website, www.getdigitalinfluence.com, where we've got a whole bunch of other amazing interviews with business owners. Thanks for your time, and have a great day.